if you're innovating, creating, or making a difference.
This show is for you. Welcome to Over Coffee. I'm Dot Cannon. Here on Over Coffee, we talk with artists and innovators about the process of changing the world in terms of what they do.
Actually, Prince wanted a poster that I had done for Jimi Hendrix, which was never used because Jimi wanted all three of the experience in the poster.
David Byrd is America's preeminent poster artist. Since the 1960s, David has been creating performance posters for such iconic musicians as Janis Joplin and Jimi Hendrix. David is the creator of the original 1969 Woodstock Music Festival poster, as well as art for award-winning Warner Brothers cartoons and theatrical work for noted Broadway musicals, which have included Follies and Godspell. David, what do you remember best about growing up in Miami Beach, Florida?
Well, the thing I remember most is how it was truly an Art Deco. It was just an Art Deco Valhalla. And I thought everywhere else in the United States was just like that. But it turned out it wasn't true.
How did you first realize that from admiring all the gorgeous Art Deco construction there that you yourself wanted to be an artist?
Well, you know, that's sort of an iffy question. I mean, I always was involved in art in school. I was part of Brush and Palette, which was the art society, and also the drama society, and I was just interested in those forms of entertainment, actually.
I've had the privilege of hearing you present, and you showed your art college thesis, which looked very dark and existential. How'd you make the shift from that to the sunny posters like the one of Jimi Hendrix, for which you're famous?
Well, I didn't think that music posters should be dark and morose. So I figured, well, this is rock. I had to look at the posters that were being done at the time, which everything was just starting out as far as the whole style of rock art. So I was just kind of flying by the seat of my pants because I didn't, you know, I was just used to doing big paintings and on somber subjects, so I had to kind of shift gears, which, you know, in order to make money, I just did it.
Please tell me the story of that journey. How did you first get into creating posters?
Well, actually, I came to New York wanting to be a painter. I came from Pittsburgh, where I'd gone to Carnegie Mellon University. And so I came to New York thinking I might sell paintings or become a painter and get a gallery and whatever. And then when I got to New York, I had friends who were... My friend Peter, who had been, these were friends from CMU, they had a light show company, and they asked me to be the artist. So I became the artist for this light show commune. We were situated in Port Jervis, New York, which is about 2 hours from Manhattan, and we did very large commercial light shows for clients like Yardley and such as that.
What happened for you with some of the posters you were creating? Of course, a favorite of mine is the one you created of Janis Joplin. But what were some of the favorite stories you had when you got into creating rock posters?
Well, yes, it was quite a journey. The first ones I did, actually, I was kind of faking it. Actually, I was faking it because I had never done a poster, and I didn't have any idea what that was all about much, because I was a serious guy, and this was not serious. So, which is totally silly, because that's how you are when you're 20, you know, or 25 or whatever.
I'm nodding my head in recognition here.
Yes, right.
When you're totally faking it, what do you do? Where do you go from there?
Well, then someone asks you to do more, and you just have to fake it more, and then you figure out what you're doing, and things get better.
T-
Tell me about the rest of it. How did you go from there to creating your Broadway posters and then creating some of the others for which you're known, such as the one for Godspell?
Well, you know, I was kind of locked into the art, the rock art scene and rock art itself. And in those days, it may be similar today, I don't know, but in those days, if you hadn't done a Broadway poster, then even though you had done many posters, you couldn't do a Broadway poster because you were a rock artist and you had to stay there. And then someone called me and they wanted a Broadway show to look like a rock poster. So then I did that, and it, you know, then I could do Broadway posters, which is kind of silly, but that's how it worked.
It's interesting how you get typecast as an artist one way or another.
Oh, yes. You know, they would call artist agents and say, okay, this is Benny, and I need some ducks. Send me all your ducks. That means you had to go over if you had ducks in your portfolio, or even birds. But then they would look and say, well, you did a robin, but can you do a duck? I mean, that's just how it was. I mean, a lot of the people weren't too sensitive.
I'm going to ask you to indulge me, because I understand that you drew Janis Joplin, who was one of the first artists to perform at the Fillmore East, and you were in the audience to see her perform?
Yes. Well, part of my deal with the Fillmore was I got $100 for a poster plus a center orchestra seat right in front of the stage. So she was maybe about 6 to 10 feet away.
What do you remember best about creating that poster of her?
Well, I was just flying by the seat of my pants once again. And actually, by the time I did my third poster, I kind of knew what I was doing a little bit more. But then I thought she was, when she was performing, she was very beautiful. Though offstage, she could kind of be plain. But she had such a strong personality that it made her pretty fantastic. And she was very smart. I know I would talk to her about stuff. She knew a lot about history and a lot of other things. So she was like, you know, not just a dumb girl from Port Arthur. She was wild and woolly.
Our audience is not going to forgive us if I don't ask you to tell me a little bit about creating the Prince poster, given his recent passing.
Oh, yes. That is sad. It was so... I just wasn't prepared for it. But I suppose maybe he had been ill for some time. I don't know. But let's see. That was in 2013, and he was doing a small show at this lounge in San Francisco, and an art director friend of mine called from San Francisco, and he wanted to do... Actually, Prince wanted the poster that I had done for Jimi Hendrix, which was never used. So, because Jimi wanted all three of the experience in the poster. So I used that idea, and I really basically put Prince's face in there and change the colors and change the type and such as that. And so it was just fine. And basically it was just printed for that venue. There were maybe 175 prints. So it was not a big thing. They were, 100 were given away to the people at the show plus people at the venue, and then Prince kept some for his people. So it was just a small run on glossy paper, but now I sell it as a fine art poster.
Our audience will probably want to know where that's available before we continue and how they can contact you.
Well, my website is David Edward Byrd Posters, all lowercase, .com.
David Edward Byrd Posters, .com. Tell me a little about your creative process, please. What goes through your head as you're creating a rock poster or something like your Follies Theater poster?
Well, basically, you know, I just kind of, I walk around for a long time. It seems like I'm procrastinating. In a way, I guess I am. But I'm always kind of thinking about the job and sort of looking around, looking at things to inspire me, and then I get ideas. Then I doodle the ideas, and then I take one or two, and I kind of do a very rough sketch, and then I build. If I like it, I go from there.
What works for you? How do you choose of several good ideas? How do you know which one is going to work really well visually?
Well, as you get older, you kind of know, but in the early days, I would do maybe three ideas in a rough form and then show those to the client, and then they would choose one, and that's the one we would use. And, you know, there would be changes along the way, but sometimes I would have one great idea and two not so great ideas. And if you show them three, a lot of times they choose the not so great ideas. So you have to be careful with that.
A reality of being a working artist.
Yeah.
What are some of the other ways you've seen the realities of being a working artist change over your decades of being one?
Well, I must say one of the great tools we have now is the computer and the internet. So in the old days, everything was done by hand. It was a very laborious process. Much of it is very boring, you know, because you're just filling in areas of blue or whatever, and it takes a long time, three or four coats of acrylic or whatever. It's a lot of work, and the computer is such a great helper because you can spend more time on it, on the good parts, and the boring parts are quickly solved. And if you don't like a color, you can change it right there. You can print out two or three versions and see how they work. And whereas when you're doing it all by hand, if you laboriously fill in this background in yellow and you realize it's horrible, you don't like it, then it's a very laborious process changing the color. Whereas, you know, on the computer, you can just change it in a flash.
If you were going to mentor a young artist today, what would be one of the first couple of things you might tell him or her about being a working artist?
Well, first, I would certainly say that you have to really love it, and you have to be able to stick with it through thick and thin and know how to change whatever you need to change to continue to get work. It's kind of tricky. A lot of people want to be artists, but they just can't do it. I mean, it's like actors, too. I mean, you know, you become a waiter, and after a while, you are a waiter. So that could happen. But I was of the mind that you just have to do anything to just keep your finger in art, even if it's, you know, crappy. You just do it the best you can and go from there and try to make it really good rather than, you know, if a client has a bad idea, you've just somehow got to change his attitude and make him think that he has created your own idea. So it's like you just have to do that. Otherwise, you just have to try to mollify him or her and do something hopefully better.
I'm hearing you say it's about marketing and it's about persistence and it's about psychology.
Yes, certainly nowadays. With rock posters, you could just do anything. Nobody, you know, it was a very nascent time, and nobody seemed to care what the image was as long as it was wacky or really caught your eye. The whole point was to catch your eye from across the street. And that's true with Broadway, but with Broadway, you have to read the script. And the art has to reflect the reflect the piece that you're being hired to represent.
When you say sometimes when you're an actor, you become a waiter and then you are a waiter, what's your best tip for avoiding that as an artist? Let's say somebody's been painting or creating whatever forever and they've seen no success. How do they keep going?
Well, one good thing is to, say, get a job with a studio or with an agency. If you have trouble, freelance is really hard, but if you can get a job where you are doing art, even if you start at the bottom, you can, if they see that you're good, you'll move up and you'll be doing a lot more art and a lot more concepts.
Suppose that you were also mentoring an artist and you come across writer's block equivalent in art. How do you get around that if you're ever stuck for a creative idea?
Well, let's see. Sometimes you don't do anything because it just doesn't speak to you. So that happens. And, time sort of takes care of that. And you may have to do a few clumsy things along the way before you can break through. But, yeah, that is a problem. And particularly when I was dealing with Broadway, they would, certainly in the beginning, they would get 10 artists to work on one show. And then they would choose one, or maybe two, but usually just one.
So no competition or anything?
No, right. There could be 10 or 20 artists involved.
What are one or two of your favorite resources to recommend to fellow artists who want to grow their skills?
Well, the internet certainly is just full of so much that you could just spend all your time looking at art and how to do it and whatever. So the best thing is, I started doing art on the computer in 1990. So, after a while, you really learn a lot. And with the internet, you certainly do have access to just amazing stuff. I mean, ideas and posters and things that relate to your job or whatever you want to do. And also, there are lots of self-help sites that will teach you how to do certain things for a certain look. And, they have little tutorials and they, guys show you how to do it. I would suggest that. Particularly, I think it's good to build a portfolio by doing some art that you would relate to a product or a personality or something. Something you like, something you'll be really interested in doing, and do samples of these different ideas so that people can see, this is just a sample. So if they can see it, it doesn't have to have been a published job.
What can we see in the future from you? What are you currently working on?
Oh, well, right now because of the death of Prince, I just have really been swamped with poster orders for his poster because he didn't really do a lot of posters. So there aren't really a lot of them around from the past. So I guess people like mine, so I'm just right now packaging and shipping posters.
DavidEdwardBirdPosters.com for anybody that would like to see that. And wow, it is pretty amazing. David, as we wrap up here, and thank you for your time, if your students could only get one lesson from you about innovation, creativity, and making a difference, what would you want that to be?
Wow, that's a big question. Well, I would say that there are some things you just have to remember. Probably the most important thing for me, and I always tell this to students, is that it's not the product, it's the process. So you have to be loving the process, because the product actually if you think about it, is merely the doo-doo of your experience. So it's, in a way, it's kind of meaningless, except that it shows you loved what you were doing. So don't get wrapped up in making this perfect thing that sort of stops you from doing anything else. You just move on, and over time, you'll see where you're going.
And did you say two things? What was the other?
The other thing was, don't compare yourself to others. This is the bane of being particularly a commercial artist, because you do have to keep up with trends, but you are unique, and you have to remember that, and don't beat yourself up. That's really bad, because then you'll cause yourself more anguish than you could ever imagine. So you just have to trust in yourself and go for it.
David, thank you for your time today.
Oh, thank you very much, Dot.
You and I have been listening to David Bird, America's foremost poster artist. You'll find David's classic posters from the rock era, along with his 2013 Prince poster, on his website, davidedwardbirdposters.com. That's David Edward Bird Posters, spelling his last name B-Y-R-D, davidedwardbirdposters.com. And check out his main website, davidedwardbird.com, where you'll also see his theatrical posters, the work he did for some award-winning Warner Brothers cartoons, and his paintings. And that concludes this edition of Over Coffee. Thank you for listening. If you'd like to hear more Over Coffee podcasts, our link is twomaverix.com. That's twomaverix.com. And you can contact us at twomaverix@gmail.com. Over Coffee is a proud lynda.com affiliate. Please check out our website, twomaverix.com. On our resources page, you'll see our Over Coffee podcast link. I'm Dot Cannon. Here's wishing you a cappuccino day.